Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's doggone good to see you tonight.
Hey, thanks.
Here's the deal. How long have we been doing this show, Mike?
It's probably going on 4 years, Ben.
So a quality program figures out something to say that doesn't act like this is the first time you've been on the radio. And I still have not been able to come up with anything.
I feel like you were in error when you labeled it a quality program.
No,
and
shoot.
That's where it's gone down the wrong road.
That's true. I opened with a lie. I've sullied the rest of the program.
The tagline of the show is Honest Faith, and the honest part is pretty heavy.
I suppose, honestly, it may not be good.
Yeah, that's possible.
Okay. All right. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us at Live for the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. So first of all, I want to talk – they put out some Twitter statistics about what people were giving up for Lent, and they're pretty interesting. So I thought we'd kind of talk through that that kind of stuff. Just you have kind of have an idea of what – I don't know. There's been a sharp drop in what people are posting on Twitter. Like they tag, I think, like 600,000 in a certain amount of time, and this year it's down like 33%. People are just not as enthusiastic. Some kid, there was like a big group of dudes that were like, school. I'm giving up school for Lent.
Hey, man, here's the deal. Yeah. Boova and I don't really understand what Lent is.
Yeah, no idea.
John Wagner, are you a man that can straighten that out for us?
No.
Okay. You guys don't do Lent?
We do Lent. Oh, yeah. Obviously we do Lent. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's kind of that time, you know.
I mean, we don't, so we really don't know.
We fish. No. In the Methodist Church, we celebrate Lent as the 40 days of Christ's temptation is a piece of that, walking toward Easter. So kind of ourselves. We're not quite as... doctrine basis the Catholics would be, so...
Well, actually, that's the only basis I have for Lent is I listen to Catholic radio on occasion.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about it, and I think, I think I'm with you. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure what's going on here. So, yeah. I mean, I obviously, I don't find anything wrong with it. I just don't know anything about it.
We'll just call it a partial fast. Hey, we're going on this 40-day partial fast. Yeah. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Kind of giving up something, or kind of taking something on, or kind of focusing on the temptation of Christ, or maybe even... ourselves walking toward the cross with Christ.
Okay. Okay.
So studying Christ's last days, studying Christ's last teachings, committing ourselves to something new, some new either biblical discipline or...
So you can add something. You don't necessarily have to take away. You can say, I'm taking on.
So Mike absolutely giving up cigarettes, beer, and he's taking on belly dancing. Is that an appropriate...
That's a weird Lent.
That's done.
You should tweet that.
I don't think so, and I've already done it. I don't remember what order they were in.
That's really kind of important, I think, though.
Maybe so.
so just so I know a little bit more about, is this like a command that I've missed, that Jesus talks about this is something we should be doing, is, you know, going through that motion, or is, yeah, because that was partially where my confusion came from, is that I didn't know where that came from, and I didn't know if that was a tradition that someone started, or if that was a biblical tradition or command that I'd missed on, so I just wasn't sure about where Lent came in.
So it's focusing on it really is, and John, you can stop me if I'm not describing this right, but it's basically just being intentional and then calling it something.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The Catholic Church has some more doctrine around it, but yeah,
right.
For the rest of mainline Protestants who would celebrate Lent, it is. It's just kind of, let's take a time, let's name it something, let's focus on a discipline or a doctrine, adding something, taking something away, being more engaged in the life of Christ prior to Easter.
Yeah,
okay. It'd be like Advent.
Beginning on Ash Wednesday. Yeah, exactly.
For Christmas. I mean, it's not
Advent. Yeah.
The Bible doesn't say do it, but it's not a bad.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what Advent is.
Yeah, I don't know what Advent is either.
That didn't help me out at all.
Preparing for
it makes you feel better. I took two Advent before I came in. To be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. You can call me in the morning.
Take two and call me in the morning.
That joke only plays in certain circles, and this ain't one of them.
Hell,
was that a lead balloon I heard?
Now hold on. So does the Mardi Gras celebration, the Fat Tuesday, whatever? What is that? How does that tie in? Does it tie in?
That's the whole idea. You go wild because you're going to start behaving tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like the bachelor party before the marriage thing.
Really?
So
I'm not saying it's biblical. I'm saying that's what it is.
It's a misguided approach to the
to the beginning of Lent. It's get all the heathenism out right before you get into piety.
And then so the Fat Tuesday is followed by Ash Wednesday, which is the beginning of Lent?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, but the Fat Tuesday, Shrove Tuesday isn't necessarily a church celebration either. Okay. So you're not going to see...
everybody, here's your beads.
Exactly. Right. We didn't play that game in church on Tuesday.
So what's Ash Wednesday for?
That's the start of Lent.
Right, but why do you do it? What's the significance of putting ash on your forehead?
The biblical from ashes you came to ashes you'll return. It's a reminder of the frailty, the finite nature of our life, and also the essential nature of salvation, you know, for us. So in that kind of moment, we use the symbol of the cross.
Yeah.
You know, in our denomination with the ashes, kind of, hey, you know, I'm only temporary and I need Jesus.
Hey, yeah, man, that is very much like our this man can't be trusted. You know what I'm saying? Like it's an outward sign of how you
sacrament. Yeah.
You know, of just a realization of what your life looks like compared to what, you know, who God is and what God is. Right. Like we were on this big kick a couple weeks ago. We were going to write in our mirror, you know, that said your kingdom can't be trusted, only to be looking at your own reflection thinking, you know, you need to realize who you are, friend, you know. And so, like, you know, if I had to put it in perspective, so I could totally understand that would make perfect sense to me.
Hey, I want to apologize to you and everyone who does Ash Wednesday ever of the number of times throughout the years on Ash Wednesday I didn't know what was going on, and I'd go up and say, hey, man, you got something on, and I'm like, oh, wait. It was. I mean, really, honestly, it's been awkward moments many times throughout the years.
I did that this year.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I apologize.
I didn't realize
that was like an important thing. It was
No. In our denomination, it really has only been since probably the mid to late 70s, early 80s that we've really taken it on as an activity,
sure,
more than a discipline. But the Catholic Church, yes.
Yeah.
Much longer.
And here's the deal with stuff like that is like it's just like any tradition or any type of outward expression. Sure, people can use that foolishly, yeah, right? Like,
oh, hey, sure.
They find piety in something that is otherwise to point you back to Jesus. Like, that can happen in anything. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's true. That's true with every denomination. It's true, mm-hmm, with anything like that people want can point to Christ. Someone else can use it in a way to point back to themselves. Right. That's just the truth.
Wearing, yeah, a cross necklace.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Some guy wears it because it's important to him and it means something to him, and some other guy wears it because he thinks it's cool and draws attention to himself. Like, I mean, you run that risk with anything, and I'll be the first guy to say that, like, my first reaction to things like that is not necessarily a one that sees depth, but to be honest with you, it's been something that's been growing in me probably over the last few years, is to recognize that, like, just because some people use something foolishly or shallowly doesn't, mm-hmm, mean there's not a lot of depth to those types of things, and to be honest with you, traditions and things of that nature aren't holy, but it doesn't mean they're not useful, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they don't point you to Jesus. It doesn't mean that they don't that being intentional about certain things like that aren't beneficial. It's just ultimately, and this is true for anything in your life, is it pointing to you or is it pointing to Christ? If it's pointing to Christ, then rock with it. If it's pointing to you, you should give it up regardless of what you think it does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Last week, I almost come embarrassed to say this. I'm not like a necklace guy. Like, you know, you mentioned the cross necklace. I used to, when I was a kid, have one. I think, yeah, you know. So last week, I was thinking, there's this, like, on Facebook, a lot of people have their pictures are like the We Are In, we are the Nazareth, the symbol of our persecuted brothers and sisters overseas. And I thought, I pray a lot for them, you know. And I was thinking, boy, if I would have had a necklace, I want that symbol.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like, is that like weird? I mean, I don't think they make it anywhere, because, like, that's kind of like.
Mm-hmm. I know a guy.
Really? It has one? Did you have one?
Yeah. Of course he does.
Where do you get something like that? Because honestly, I would be like this continual reminder to pray. Like, no one would know what it is even, but like me, because it's not a cross. Well, people would know, but... Yeah. Okay, we'll talk.
All right.
I'll have my people call you. But I was, you know, doing Googling and searching, and I thought, and then I kind of felt like, well, I kind of hope they don't make necklaces. I mean, that's kind of like, oh, people are dying. This is cool. I'll make a gold necklace out of it. I mean,
isn't that commercial?
It's just an Arabic letter, noon.
Yeah.
And that's how they identify themselves as Christians, is Nasreen.
Yeah.
Isn't that the basic nature? I mean, that's the nature of the cross, too, though. I mean, it's a reminder of something that
death penalty on my neck here. It's like, yeah, look at this. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to get one.
Okay. it's decided.
I'd like a big gold chain and a convertible.
All right, done. Wait,
what
was that last part?
we're going to play a game called 50 Shades or Song of Solomon. So I'm going to read you a quote.
Oh, my God.
And you need to tell me whether it is a whether it is from Song of Solomon or 50 Shades. We're going to see how well you know your Bible and how well you know your proposed smut.
Before you invite me to this thing next time, I want to list the topics.
When we were dating, I used to send my wife cards all the time with quotes from Song of Solomon just to see if she would pass the embarrassment test. So I should have this one down.
I had no idea this was coming.
That's the last time I read it, by the way.
You're in your youth and I delight in you. Click, click. So anyway, we're going to give that a shot. We're going to see what we know. For as racy as I think sometimes you propose at 50 Shades is, we'll just see if we can tell the difference. It's a bit of a secular Solomon, but more apropos for your current world.
Did our online viewership just go up right there? Is that what happened?
We need the numbers, boys.
Right. I was going to say, are we going to tag that on the YouTube?
Here's the thing. Last time I tagged 50 Shades, I had a mini blinds dealer give us a call. But I feel like we've got more legs on this thing. So we're going to see what happens. Hey, balloon's going up. also, Dan's got some Pope style. Dan, you have a preview of your Pope style?
Yeah. I took my daughter to a scholarship competition this week, and she impressed me. I mean, and it has deeply, like, affected me this week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. The Probably rare that. And jubilant Pope style from Dan Hudson coming right around. Also, Buva, you had some Facebook evangelism thoughts.
Right. I want to get everybody's thoughts on getting lost in the comments section of somebody's post when it comes to sharing Jesus through Facebook. I think very easily it can be a trap, and very easily it can be something that could be beneficial, but I want to see what you guys think about it.
I feel like Wagner's intrigued.
And I get a grunt.
The Illuminati.
Okay.
And the Illuminati.
All right, so here's what to give up for Lent. Twitter reveals top 100 ideas for 2015 on what folks are giving up for Lent. It says nearly 1 in 5 Americans observed Lent last year. This year, more than 400,000 tweeted about their fast. Food and technology remained the most popular categories that tweeting Americans reported giving up in 2015. The top 5 choices, school, chocolate.
What, school's the top 5?
Yeah, number 1.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, school, chocolate.
I'm going to miss school so much. I'll think about Jesus.
don't sass me, teach.
I'll give you up for Lent.
We don't.
I feel like you don't breadth, width, and depth of the Lord that you're dealing with when you throw smeal.
Yeah. So we got a big, it's coming, Pete. I'm going to set a date probably in the next 2 weeks, and we're doing the buffet showdown. We did the, what was it?
Hibachi.
The hibachi. Yeah. Went to the hibachi. And, I mean, it got good reviews, but then the Twitter suggestion was that there's a better one. And so we're going to check that one out in March and give the old Life in the Path review of the buffet.
Ew.
So that's coming up. And that's a free-for-all, meaning free for me because I'm paying for myself. And you can come and join us at your own dime.
It's the classic church Dutch treat.
Yeah. Christians don't pay for other folk. That's the buffet. Wait, unless you want to pay for me as a Christian, then I can accept. It's time to write the tide, boys, in my favor. All right, so here's the other top 10. So we said school, chocolate, Twitter, alcohol, social networking, swearing, soda, mm-hmm. sweets, fast food, coffee, college. I'm going to reword this to having sex with boys.
Yikes.
Holy cats.
That's in the top?
This one is explicit. And 13 is a tongue-in-cheek you. I'm giving up you for Lent. A break of sadness.
I feel like these aren't really people that care about Lent.
No, maybe.
So go back to the beginning. So Lent is supposed to be, like you said, like a fast, right? This 40 days of fasting as you do these things.
Journey.
Like, oh my goodness, I'm hungry today. I missed my chocolate. I missed my Twitter. Maybe I'll go pray instead. So something tells me there's a few of these on here that
not quite understanding,
not
right?
Not quite getting that.
Cold weather has moved up 79 places.
I'd fast that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, hot Cheetos made the top 100. Hey, you know what's interesting? Marijuana is 42. And 14 is Lent.
Wait, you said marijuana was like next to the Cheetos?
Hold on. Surrounding marijuana. No. Feelings, 41. Marijuana, 42. Shopping, 43. Rice, 44.
Now, hold on. Some of those are on purpose, right? Because they sneak into everything. Like people that give up ice or something. You know what I'm saying? Or something that you find in everything that says, look, I got to be more careful on what I'm choosing because it's such a common ingredient. And, you know, not only will it help me, you know, remember that I'm focusing on what I'm focusing on, but it just becomes more of a minute by minute instead of an hour by hour, you know?
One of my daughters fasted ice once, and she kind of thought, yeah. It was really tough.
Yeah.
There's ice everywhere. Yeah.
So of the snack foods, Hot Cheetos is number one by far. And then popcorn, Doritos, potato chips, and regular.
I feel like this is reflective of the general age group that uses Twitter and their attitude towards Lent.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't think it's an indication of what the man thinks it's an indication of, right?
Life on the Path didn't tweet any of those, correct?
No, we didn't participate.
We did not make.
How many people say the word Advent outside of church?
Yeah.
Nobody. So how many people really say or use the word Lent probably appropriately outside of church?
Yeah.
It's mostly in laundromats.
Not even all churches, right?
Yeah, so right, yeah.
I think this is an example of like this society taking something that was once perhaps doctrinal church and saying, hey, let's lay over top of that.
Right.
Something fun.
There's a social thing around being able to say, hey, I'm giving up something. Here's a good reason for me to talk to everybody on Twitter. So anyway, those are your top tens. It's you know what's interesting, I guess, is people obviously if this is the reaction, right? Obviously missing the big point, right, of what it's actually pointing to. But it's not serious for them to a certain extent, right? Because like if you're giving up, like, okay, school, I'll throw that out, right? But like, chocolate, Twitter, swearing. Soda, right? Like, there's inklings of it being rooted in saying, "I am legitimately trying to give up something." It's just it embraces the superficial part of it, but never makes the boat never makes its way across the ocean into the island, which is actually having it point towards Christ, which I suppose is something that we've been talking about that we see a lot lately, right? Like we embrace some of the teachings of the Bible for its moral direction. But often not further enough that ultimately who it came from and who it points to. And so as we do that, like this is kind of the result of that, right? Like I need to be a better person before I go to church on that single Easter morning. And so I'm going to give up these things. Now giving up these things and pointing to Christ is awesome. Just giving up those things, isn't like moving the needle just a little bit. It basically doesn't move the needle at all, right? Because the whole point is to point back to Christ.
Yeah, I heard a guy explain it really well once when he was talking about, you know, some of the reasons that God has included, I mean, some of the guidance in the morality ways, right? Like, basically, he's pointing you to a joy in him. And so, like, there's things that he's provided that we can either use for his glory and our joy or you know, basically just our happiness, right? But, like, if the worship stops on the item or the act and doesn't roll up to God, then I mean, how's the Bible usually phrase it? You've been paid in full. Right, you've gotten everything that you thought you were going to get out of it, right? But like when that worship rolls up past the item or the act or the feeling, you know that God is full well knows because He created it and put it on the earth, right? If it doesn't roll up to Him, then really you've gotten everything that you've expected,
right? So you go 40 days and you give up swearing, you might be able to be happy with how clean you kept your mouth and maybe any negative consequences are removed around you for you using bad language, but ultimately. If you look to where it points to, you get an example of your full restoration and what comes from Christ and what He's able to do in your life, right? Like, so you took the shorter story, and although the short story is good, it's not near as good as the full picture.
Yeah,
that otherwise it points.
Yeah, it's like my kids are pretty excited about a dollar. You know what I'm saying? Not knowing that there's a $100 bill out there somewhere. You know, like they're happy with the dollar, not realizing that the $100 is possible. You know, or not believing that the $100 is possible.
Right.
And my most spiritually alive times are during fasts. It just is. So people, if they do it with the right spirit, I mean, it could be a really powerful time for them.
Yeah, yeah. That's
whatever you call it, Lent, fast, you know, whatever.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is like, again, it is a foolish thing, I think, to write things off when they're motions, when they're commitments to things. Because frankly, there's great biblical examples of God's people doing those things. And I think we're blind to say, well, they did these things and I don't have any reason to do this. All I need is Jesus. And I agree with that, right? But like, obviously God's people have
Trouble focusing.
true. Yeah. And in the relationship with God, like there are ways in which you see them growing spiritually. And there is a certain, it's the same sense that we look back where people have some historical pride to say people 2,000 years ago don't know what we know today. Like sometimes we even take that when it comes to certain spiritual disciplines. Now, if you worship the discipline over Jesus, yeah, you got a problem, right? But if you see how God's people have engaged in those to engage with God, I think we're foolish to act like we're beyond that type of thing when God's people have interacted with him in that way.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Anyway, my phone, fried food, selfies. There's a weird order on some of this stuff. I suppose it's interesting to think about where people's if this is representative of not necessarily direct biblical, but their own moral guideposts of how I should live my life and what I should give up. If there's some sense of morality, it's interesting to see the things that they say above one above the other.
Hey, well,
like
that,
swearing is still pretty high.
That's the funny thing, though, right? It's like this is, I don't know why this keeps sticking with me, right? Well, like it was when Paul was talking about people that. Where God's people and people that have the law ingrained in their heart, right? They haven't been taught it, but they just have, like people obviously show themselves like a certain amount of non-taught morality, right? Like who's to say swearing is bad? You know, who's to say that selfies are bad? I mean, people recognize without the Bible, you know, God's heart on you taking a picture of yourself all the time, right? Like there's just something that's a bit much about it, right? And so like it does seem odd that like almost some of that stuff is self-convicting for people who obviously don't take Lent seriously or, you know, the rolling up of the worship anyway, but like they can look at it and say, look, I'm depending, chocolate is owning me. Well, who says that's a problem? That's to be owned by something that you love, right? Like who even recognized that as being an issue?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's to a culture where we're like, hey, that they don't know right from wrong. They're self-convicting on things that otherwise, I mean, would make my list. They would just make my list to point you to Jesus, where they're just making your list and convicting you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, you can get more. If you go to openbible.info, there's a blog post about what Twitters are giving up for Lent 2015 edition, if you intend to enjoy on that even just a little bit more. All right, Bova, so what's on your mind for Facebook evangelism?
So I find myself scrolling through my feed and looking at a lot of posts of my friends and the people that I know personally or that I've connected with throughout the years. And I find myself kind of at a crossroads recently. Because of the fact that there's a lot of people who are pouring out their heart onto Facebook and you know, quote unquote, throwing their drama onto Facebook and stuff like that, that are honestly going through some tough times and are legitimately seeking, you know, someone to tell them, hey, you know, everything's going to be okay and all the good stuff. You know, this is something that's happened before and it'll happen again and life goes on and all that good stuff, right? And my crossroads is one that I've seen taken both ways, because I've seen people try to do the whole Facebook evangelism thing. So what I mean by that is either commenting on someone's post or someone else's feed that's been going on and jumping onto it, posting on their wall and something like that, and talking about Jesus and talking about who God is and, you know, doing the whole quoting a scripture and then kind of explaining it, or even just quoting the scripture itself and then leaving it alone. So that being one portion of jumping in onto the comment section and saying, you know, well, God's heart on the matter is this. And then the other flip side I see as someone avoiding doing that entirely, not jumping into a comment section, not jumping onto someone's feed and then starting to talk about God or even consult that person in that forum. And here's why I ask. Are we turning Facebook or the whole Facebook evangelism thing into a thing that could be used for good, where we're honestly talking to people about who Jesus is and honestly connecting with people? Or are we using it as a substitute for creating actual legitimate relationships and having legitimate conversations one-on-one, whereas I can sit down with one of you guys and have a conversation about Jesus person-to-person, or I can just comment on a post on your wall that says, hey, Jesus loves you. Have we turned it into something that could have been intended for good, that has turned into something that's just us avoiding relationship and us avoiding honest fellowship with people that are in trouble? So that we use it as a weird medium for us to counsel them or talk to them about Jesus rather than actually trying to make an open communication or relationship with them.
John Wagner.
You asked me because I went,
Your yes. Piqued interest has really got me wondering.
I'm intrigued by what people consider to be relationship and communication and if it's relative. You know, like I'll use a dumb example, but I used to hear people who used to read books, like actual paper books, right? I know, right?
I gave
and
those
then all
up
of a sudden stuff shows up like Amazon readers or electronic readers. Oh, it's not the same as holding a real book.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't the same. You don't know the experience until you've held that paper, you know, typewriter to computer, et cetera. I think there's some value, obviously, in face-to-face. You know, I can see you. I can get close to you. We can have a real conversation. I can read your face. But I think more and more as communication becomes electronic, we're foolish, at least I feel foolish, to tell people, hey, you know what, that's not real. Like, don't put work out there. You know, don't respond to that the same way you'd respond to conversation, or don't at least put an attempt out there to reach someone if you know them, if you can kind of sense, hey, this person's really in need. Like, they're posting something that I feel God is calling me to say something about. If I can't reach you, if I can't find you, if I can't get to you, I think the way we communicate via whether it be Twitter or Vine or Instagram or, you know, Facebook kind of feels like the old one now.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook's like the one we're kind of holding on to, waiting for the next thing. But I say run with it. I think a lot of folks use social media, Facebook, even emails. They kind of become bullies behind the computer. They can say what they want to say. They don't have to really fight for themselves. They can be bigger than they really are. But you also have a lot of conversation you'd never have, because you'd never be bold enough to say, I'm really lost, or I'm really confused, or I don't know how to tell somebody I'm ready to, you know, do something terrible. So I tell people run with it, that, you know, be cautious, be in prayer. The same way that I need to ask God, how do you want me to talk to this person face-to-face? I need to say that same thing before I go blast somebody on their social media wall. But to not speak to someone that way, when they've reached out that way, I think we've been missing the boat a little bit.
Yeah, so I think one of the risks there, and I think this is John kind of touched on this, was that we treat it like it's not a conversation, right? Like we deal in moments. Someone said something, we dump a bit of information or scripture, true or otherwise, and you do it in a moment. Now take that same interaction, and let's say you had it face to face. There was a guy who was running into some trouble, and he's having a conversation. There's five or six people around. You walk up. You'd be like Proverbs 8:9, and then you just leave. You know what I'm saying? Like that's equivalent to what you're doing. And so the medium is that people are dealing with. I agree with John. It's foolish to act like to hold certain types of connections or relationships in a higher esteem. If that's how people are connecting, that's how they are, right? Like there's people who make great friendships. You know, over communicating in those ways. Think of people who used to. We act like we're the new party, right? Where face to face was always been the thing. Like, yeah, people were writing letters. The Adamses were almost never together. Abigail and John, like they were always writing because they were separated, right? And theirs is a.
Are you talking about the president, John Adams?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were talking about the Adams family, and I thought, why?
I have to admit, I kind of did, too. Wait a minute.
The Adamses.
Mike and I run with a different
They
crowd.
Appear to be together all the time.
Lost references. It's all right.
They live in a big, creepy house.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
If it makes any difference, I thought of both.
Classy. So anyway, I don't know that it's I think we want to argue that the medium is not good, and frankly, like I'm hesitant a lot of times to jump in, not because I don't think there's conversation that can be had that can be valuable, but I won't stick with it, right? Like if I'm just checking my Facebook feed and someone's got a deal going on, I know that I can give a comment and I probably won't touch that thing for 4 hours. Like that's just a rude way to have a conversation, right? But I've also had some very productive Facebook like message things, talking through with things, dealing in type, and just having that conversation. So I would say you're more prone to bail on a conversation unintentionally or without thinking about it because it's less socially awkward to do it. But if you're otherwise intentional about understanding what that feels like, and you're committing to it's not like you have to be on there for 8 hours, right? But like if you're touching base with someone for 45 minutes today, and then you're talking to them again a little bit tomorrow, even if you say, hey, how is it going, right? That's just much different than than sharing a social moment or continuing a conversation that actually helps someone. So, like, I think that's more the difference than the medium. We should just understand that the medium actually contributes to us acting that way because it feels like we can deal in moments like that. It's a post, a response, and a moving on. I think that's where your risk is.
Yeah. And I think something you maybe have implied, but as you start to read down through a feed, you know, so someone will say, hey, I need help, or I'm having a good day, and you start to, Proverbs 8, whatever. But then they start to pile and pile and pile and pile, and a separate conversation begins to happen that has nothing to do with, you know, how it started. So at that point, you do reach out back to the original person. Hey, if you need to talk. Like, your feed just blew up now, just like Life from the Path does. We went from Twitter to something crazy to 50 Shades. I don't know where it went, but if you want to get together later, we can talk face-to-face, or we can do a separate message.
Yeah, I feel like that's solid. Like, I mean, you can kind of get a grasp. It's just like any other social situation, right? Like, you know whether this conversation is not best to be had in front of 10 people. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know there's – I mean – they've reached out in a certain way. Some people who have lost their bearing will reach out in any way, right? Like, and sometimes I take that in kind of rough, where I'm like, why would you put that on there? You look like you lost your mind. You don't want to be telling everybody that stuff, you know. But the truth of the matter is, they lost their footing and they're grabbing at the closest cliff, and they just don't, you know, they don't know where to grab onto, and so that's what they did. And you know, but like, I think when push comes to shove, there's certain conversations that are going to be not in front of 15 people and not separating, like that Proverbs 8 thing is almost a perfect example, right? Like, we talk a lot about separating what Jesus said versus who he is, right? And you can't do that, right? You got to present the entire package. And so throwing a Bible verse or a quip from Jesus, or you know, like, separating that from who he is not comforting, right? Who he is comforting. Yeah. And so, like, if that's the message you're trying to get across, I don't know that Proverbs 8 is going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so that is a conversation that you know, if they already know Jesus, that you know, that you can get with them one-on-one and say, well, let's talk about it. Let's pray on this thing and let's do this. If they don't, you know, you can show them Christ's love first and say, and you know, eventually get to that point where you can say, look, it's, you know, this well is not coming from me. You know, like, I don't have the depths that you need to help with this issue, but I know a God that does. And so, once again, like, that's just not a conversation for 15 people.
So, if in general we're willing to condone the medium of using Facebook or using social media to...
Does condone mean good or bad?
It's good. Approve.
Okay, love. We continue
approve.
On.
We're good with it.
If we're okay with people using the social media to talk about Jesus or have the relational conversations, which I tend to agree with you guys. I think that you can have those relational conversations through Facebook. I think that very easily you can get lost in that comment section, but I think that there are well-intentioned people that could use it correctly. Are there any general do's and don'ts that someone who's going through a Facebook feed should use at their discretion based off of, should I jump in on this and should I comment? Should I message based off of the situation? Or is there something that I should try and reach out to them personally through a text message or phone call first? Or
I message
like
every time.
Yeah.
I don't think that once I've ever joined in a group pile on of a take on anybody's life. It just seems messy. I don't know. That might just be me, but like I think I always go straight for the one-on-one. You got something to say, you know, call me or whatever. But like, I mean, just having that conversation, a two-way conversation in front of 10 ways is just like, it just never goes well. It just doesn't.
Right. You got to assume that, like, if you're responding to someone's post, regardless of the social media platform or in a group, every time you post something, just imagine that after that, you're also saying the phrase, what do you guys think? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it was. And then, and again, put yourself in a face-to-face conversation and think of how often you'd actually be doing that. Hey, I just told this guy he's having trouble with his wife and I think he should do X, Y, and Z. Hey, what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're doing. And so I would consider that question if you really care what they think. Because to be honest with you, a lot of times when someone's got something heavy going on, I don't really care what this gaggle of friends that they have thinks. They may or may not be contributing to this man's problems. And so the honest truth is I don't care. And so I don't, and frankly, I don't need there's some sort of vindication of being the right guy in a group of fools. But that's, you got to give that up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't need to be the one reasonable guy in a cat of 10 that are having some sort of tiff with this man and giving him bad advice. Because what are you going to do? You're going to convince 10 fools? You're not that persuasive. Yeah,
that's right. Now you're fighting 10. That's exactly right. You're fighting 10 fools, right? You would rather be the right guy in a room of 2 than the right guy in a room of 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there might be other people in the room who are listening for some bit of wisdom, something that, because they might be facing a similar situation and they're not going to speak up on it.
I've never met anyone like that on Facebook, Eric.
Exactly. They don't come out. They're just wallflowers about it. They're stalking. They're you know, not literally stalking, but they're just watching, and you know, they've got hurts that they can relate to, and they're seeing other people express it, and they want to know, all right, what are some perspectives on this? So what are things? And if it's only ever resolved in messages, then they're never going to get it.
So I think that probably depends on how people have kind of proposed this conversation, right? Like, If you're having, hey, here's what's going on, what are some perspectives, that's different than, you know, the something that is basically about their personal problem.
You talked about the response saying, you know, hey, what do you all think? I think what we forget in the do's and don'ts is that when I post, I'm basically walking into a room of 600 people.
Yeah.
Because you all have, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 quote-unquote friends.
Yeah.
And you're just shouting at the top of your lungs, you know, hey, I lost my job today, or hey, I love my kids, or whatever it is, and you're expecting everyone to listen.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it's the initial post we should worry about more than the response. The who are you?
Understand it.
What do you mean you don't understand? You don't understand what?
just all of what we were talking about.
Well, done, why don't you care about fasting?
That's kind of the question, right? It's like, I feel like I should, and people who I respect for their walk with Christ, who I think have an honest heart for God, do it. And I don't know why. Maybe I see it as a mature discipline that maybe I just don't do. I don't know. I think maybe Herrick's right. Maybe I just haven't asked God if I should or if he wants me to, or I suppose that's possible.
Well, don't let us stop you.
Well, you're not.
All right.
I don't know. That does seem like a long list of stuff, though. Like, if I have to say, maybe this is possible, but I haven't asked God about it, I'm going to have to go through, like, Lord, should I own a Buick? I just check it. Just check it in today. See how things are going.
I thought about buying some chickens recently, but I haven't really heard something from you, so.
I haven't thought about buying 5 chickens, 6 chickens. I'm waiting for a ding.
I'm going to fleece it. Is the fleece going to be wet when I wake up in the morning? 7 chickens?
I'm going to fleece it. Can I use my... you got the right one, baby t-shirt.
Although there's no examples of Jesus doing the chicken buying, there's several examples of him fasting, you know, especially making big decisions and in pivotal times. So you can certainly say, at least say, wow, that was a big part of his life, and it was a big part of the culture at that time, you know.
Wait, what's one? What's one of him fasting?
Before choosing the disciples.
Yeah. Okay.
That's one. Before the temptation. There's two off the top of my head.
Does that count as a fast? He went out into a desert where there was no food available.
Well,
that's more of a starvation.
Why do you think he did
it intentionally? Yeah. He chose his environment.
And he could have very easily just went.
Hold on a minute.
Bread.
The Holy Spirit chose his environment.
They let him on a fast.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, he didn't like, I'm heading out for a fast. The Holy Spirit said, go to the desert.
Well, all right, but he
knew
it was
going to be... You've kind of misplayed it to go to your point.
He knew it was 40 days, and he knew it was not over when Satan was offering him bread, so...
Yeah, fair enough.
Bummer.
All right. Yeah. So anyway, social media.
Did we
land our Facebook conversation?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just think,
go ahead.
I just think you have to be careful that you're not speaking to people, but you are speaking with people.
Yeah.
Just like any conversation, but you can do that in any group. I'm just here to make sure my voice is the loudest and you hear me.
Kind of like a fast bully.
Yes.
So drop it into the Facebook comments. Proverbs 3:5-6, all caps, exclamation points, and then drop it out.
All the time. It's most annoying watching Christians pile on in a conversation on Facebook or social media, and they're throwing verses, and then they start arguing with each other. And here's the person with the legitimate need, and we, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, but I'm this and I'm that, you know, and we're speaking to people, not with people.
Right. And here's the deal too: is if you're talking about what Herrick was talking about, whereas some people may benefit from the conversation, if you go in and you throw out like chapter verse and not actually post the information,
the verse? Yeah.
Yeah, like you've just excluded a bunch of people and also shamed them to say, if you don't know what this is, people will judge you. Because you should know when I say, you know, Matthew 8:10, you know.
I don't
want to
know what a galactic, and we're going, well, it's Galactians 4. You know? Like, I don't know what that is.
Galactus 4? Out of the
Battlestar
Marvel Universe?
Galactic, yeah.
It's pompous. Like, it's just, it's a pompous way to deal with people. You know the Bible. If you knew your verses, I wouldn't have to do this.
I've had that happen to me so many times, it's ridiculous.
I know.
Someone just drops a verse, and they're just like, well, here. It's like, I don't know that verse. Like, tell me what it means if you got it from memory.
That's when you have to make up one to go back at them. Well, you know Jacob 4.
you've heard of Buva 13:1. Oh, man.
That's not Bible.
I need to take that
Nobody
back
knows
right
no
now.
Buva.
Nobody knows no
All right.
Buva.
All anyway.
Okay, so I appreciate that. I think that's something that I've personally dealt with multiple times because, like I said, I scroll through my feed and I see a lot of people hurting. And I jump in and I have caught myself many times trying to just comment and then leave it at that. And then I stop myself and realize, I'm like, is this honestly personal? Is this something that I'm willing to follow through on? And is the heart of Jesus for me? I've stopped myself, say something real quick. and walk away. Facebook. But I think you need to make it that personal relationship, just like Dan was saying, rather than talking to people, talk with them. So thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate that.
All right. Here's the big here's the big test, boys.
All right.
Here's the big test. Available from faithit.com. 50 Shades or Song of Solomon. How well do you know your Bible?
Hold on. This is a third-party quiz?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I borrowed it from the net.
I'm ready.
I actually feel better about that now.
All right. So, because so otherwise...
Alleviated some stress of mine.
Otherwise, I would have had to go read the 50 Shades to find out scandalous items so that I could present them in the quiz, and I don't have time or energy for that stuff.
That's fair.
Some other Christian organization has done it.
It's homework for a big quiz, dear.
Oh, dear.
Here we go. Number one. Your belly button is perfectly formed like a glass filled with wine. Song of Solomon, 50 Shades. Group.
Song of Solomon.
Solomon.
Everybody's in for Solomon?
Yeah.
Are we going to go around the room, Ben?
Okay, yeah, go ahead, Bova. You're up. Shut up. Go ahead and just spit it out.
Song of Solomon.
Yeah, Solomon.
Solomon.
I'm going the other way.
Shades.
Shades.
Wagner's in for Shades. Bye.
I feel like I got to go Solomon.
All right, here we go. Song of Solomon. It is. Song of Solomon.
That
7-2.
Right. Belly button, for real? Belly button? What translation are we working with here?
Well, that's a good question. That's Dan's fallback answer. All right,
is
here
that
go.
The 84 NIV? Because that's how I live.
Here we go. Number two. I was a virgin, like a wall. Now my breasts are like towers. When my lover looks at me, he is delighted with what he sees. Shades or Solomon? Herrick.
Oh, that's Solomon.
Solomon? Oh, Dan?
Yeah. S-O-S.
Solomon.
Wagner? Mike?
Dang, I was going to go the other way, but...
No, I think I remember that towers bit.
Towers.
Breast and towers. Boova.
Solomon.
Let's see. Solomon. Song of Solomon 8:10.
Are they all Solomon? Is this some kind of...
No, I don't...
See
I don't
how dirty the Bible is.
Is that one of those
here
tests?
We go. Number three. I gasp, and I'm Eve in the Garden of Eden, and he's the serpent, and I cannot resist. Shades or Solomon? Dan.
Shade.
Shades.
Definitely Shades.
Shades.
Absolutely Shades.
50 Shades. It is indeed Shades. So far, so good, boys. Number four, I feel the color of my cheeks rising again. Song of Solomon, 50 Shades. Wagner, I feel the color of my cheeks rising again. Shades or Solomon?
Shades.
Mike?
Shades.
Shades.
50.
Yeah, I'm going Shades, too.
Why did you say 50 when everyone else said Shades, Herrick?
He's his own man.
Why you gotta wear purple when it's red day at school? Shades. Shades is indeed the answer.
Not 50, but Shades.
Here we go. Your thighs shelter a paradise of pomegranates with rare spices. Solomon or Shades? Mike.
That's Solomon.
Boova.
Solomon.
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 Your thighs shelter a paradise of pomegranates with rare spices. We chose Solomon. It is Song of Solomon 4:13.
Tell you what.
That pickup line never worked for me.
Yep. How familiar are you with pomegranates?
Number six.
Not the right crowd, you know what I'm saying?
The shock runs through me, and it's the sweetest, strangest, hedonistic feeling.
Go for heaven's sakes.
Wait on it. Breast tower. My body convulses at the sweet, stinging bite. Boova.
No. No.
Shades.
Shades. Herrick.
Shades.
Damn!
I'm sure some of that may have happened. No, I'm not. I'm going Shades.
Shades.
I'm embarrassed to be here. Shades.
I've always been embarrassed to be here. Shades.
Welcome home.
And Shades it is.
Indeed.
Shades it is. Here we go. How many are these other? Okay, 10. Here we go. Number 7. Kiss me over and over again. Your love is sweeter than wine. Shades or Solomon? Herrick.
Solomon.
Dan.
Solomon.
That's possible, Solomon.
That's definitely Solomon.
Solomon.
Mm. There's a guy named Derek Webb who sings a song, and he goes, sweeter than wine. So I assume he's a Bible man, and this is indeed Solomon.
I didn't see that coming. Yeah. There's no part of that I thought Ben's going to do that. Zero chance, I thought.
I was not expected at the beginning of this bit.
Song of Solomon 1-2. I want to find it. Number 8, I gasp, and all the muscles deep in my belly clench. Solomon or Shades? Dan.
Shade.
Shade. deep in my belly. This
again. You thought that on, you thought that belly button thing
yeah,
was
but
it?
Again, this must be the message or something.
I'm, I'm going with Solomon.
Mike with Solomon. Booba.
I go Shades.
What's funny, Dan?
This is Shades.
Solomon.
All right, all right.
Solomon was a little rough.
All right. Shades. It is indeed 50 Shades.
Dang it.
Mike Foost.
What?
Here we go. Two more. Wrong. Two more. So far, so good, boys. He grabs me suddenly and yanks me up against him, one hand at my back holding me to him and the other grabbing my hair. Shades or Solomon? Wagner.
Oh, my gosh. All I can imagine right now is my wife sitting at home going, he's gone for this. He's not home for this.
Neanderthal language.
Jesus radio?
I'm just teasing. I'm going to say that's Shades.
Mike.
Nah, Wagner shamed me. I can't participate. Shades, I guess.
I didn't post it on Facebook, though. I don't see Solomon using the phrase, yanks me closer to him. So I'm going to go Shades.
Seems legitimate.
This is Shades.
Shades, Dan?
Yeah, Shades.
All right. We guess Shades. It is indeed Shades. All right, number 10. Seal the deal. All right. Welcome back. If you're still watching the Life in the Path broadcast after these technical difficulties, I really do appreciate you, but you can go ahead and go to bed.
Yeah.
We do a podcast. You can pick that up then. Or if you're listening on the Truth Network, I've already edited that stuff out, and this seems completely unnecessary to you. Anyway, we just finished up the quiz. Can you tell the difference between Song of Solomon versus 50 Shades? I feel like all except for Wagner, we knocked it out of the park there.
Whoa. Mike messed over here. My brother had just as many problems over here.
This is what
one.
Happens? You don't
and
put
it was
up,
a belly button.
You don't put up a shield. You put up a sword, Wagner? Yeah.
And I would think the difference, like, what made it so easy is the Solomon stuff was enjoying the beauty of God's creation. And the 50 Shades, which it was just kind of had a negative feel to it. It's about me. And the Solomon was, it's about you. I think there was a pretty good big difference there. Just to distinguish it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Put a little.
Yeah. Which, you know, it reminds us that like, for all the tizzy that kind of comes around this, God is very familiar with what things do. He's familiar on how people feel. He's you know, he's created these things. And so, like, he knows what you're ultimately after. And just remember, he's pointing you to something that has complete joy in it as it is. And so, like, if you feel like that's lacking, the real thing to dig into is what God has created and pointed you to, as opposed to trying to explore something outside of what he's done. Because obviously, if God has the right answers, he's got the right answers. And that goes for all things.
Yeah, and actually, I don't have any reason to suspect God of shortchanging me. You know what I'm saying? I've not seen any realism or backup to that he's selling me half goods. You know what I'm saying? If he says, look, this is where the joy is, I say, okay, that's where I want to be.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Dan has some much ballyhooed Pope style, and here's the setup. So someone has mistaken Dan for the Pope, and they've told everyone that Dan Pope is going to come out and give them information. For their lives, on how to live their lives. So now people have gathered on Dan's lawn, and they refuse to leave until Dan comes out on his faux stoop and gives some Pope-style advice that applies to both his life and theirs so that they may disperse from his lawn. Go ahead, Pope Dan.
All right. I'll just say the message I would tell them. Then I'll give you the backstory. Okay. What I would tell them is to speak their faith boldly, no matter what the consequence. And here's why I say that. We went to my daughter and I went to a college. She was doing a competition for a scholarship, a very valuable scholarship, a full ride potential. There was like, I don't know, 250 or something people, and they're given 16 scholarships, six full ride tuition and room and board, 10 full tuition. And it's based upon, of course, their criteria got them there in the first place. They were invited to this thing. But then it's based upon that day. You have a 15 or 20 minute essay that you write, and they give you three different prompts, and then a personal interview. And so she's got approximately $150,000 on the line in a non-viable college, right?
Yep.
And she has these three prompts, and the one she chose, I mean, I'm going to have some of the details wrong, but it has something to do with math. Do you believe that math is something that is there and man discovered, or did man create it? Did somebody else create it, or did man create it, basically? Yep.
And my daughter's the kind of gal who she's kind of the wallflower. She's not the one who jumps up and down and screams Jesus. She believes she has a deep faith. But, I've through the years during public school have encouraged her, hey, throw a little a little Jesus topic in some of her assignments. She's always like, I'm not going to do that. She's not going to go controversial. She's not. She just, toes the line and does her stuff. And so here she is. With a significant amount of money on the line, and she writes all about the design that God created, and I mean it's all a math thing. I don't know. We haven't seen it. I haven't read it because it was handed in, but I was even asking her about it today. Like what are some things you said in there? And I'll never be able to repeat it. But like what's the number E? Is there that a number? Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's talking about the number E and the design, and it's like in a snail, but it's also in the beauty of a face, the face that you would call beautiful, and it's design and things like, look at all these people through all of the world throughout the ages that have come with these math systems, and you put it all together, it's the same thing. That's not like us creating different things and throwing it in a pile. It was already created, and she really pointed out, my point is, she pointed it toward God and toward a designer that created this thing, and we have benefited from that, and from that we've done all kinds of things, and it just blew me away that she would say that, knowing full well this could be kissing goodbye any chance at this scholarship, and she did it anyway. And it wasn't like it wasn't like an in your face, I'm going to show you. It was just like, here's my observation, of why, and here's why I answered the question this way. And I thought to myself, man, I don't know that I would have done that if I were in her place. I'd go the safe route. I'd be like, oh yeah. Whatever math, because of math, I need to do some math formula thing. I was just so proud of her. And I told her, I said, I've never in my life been more proud of anything you've ever done than this right here. Just because I don't even care if you get any scholarship or not. You've stated your faith and you believed in it, and you just took a risk. I mean, that'd be my challenge for people is not to be so afraid. We're so pansy, We're either so bold and weird when we share our faith that we're just like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or we just don't say anything. And why can't we be somewhere where we're just legitimately speaking of faith as intelligent people with something to say? And that's my thing. Just if God opens a door, you go through it. And obviously he led her to that. We prayed about it and she prayed about it ahead of time. So when that moment came, she didn't know what the prompts were until she saw it.
Yeah, right.
And she just felt like, I'm going this way, and like, wow. So I was a pretty proud dad, and that's it's for all of us. We can share our faith at the right time, and when God opens that door, and don't be afraid to do it. Do it. Say it.
Yeah. That's the truth is there's any number of things that cause you to be the person that doesn't share. It could be the wacky Christian who's done it wrongly, and you're afraid to be lumped in that group. Sorry, Boovy, you're just to my left, or guilty, one or the other. Put the thought on it.
The Facebook prophet.
You have this idea that it is people are not willing to hear it. But the truth is that like most people that come to Jesus have to be faced with the truth of who Jesus is, right? And if the story of Jonah tells you anything, it's that even people that don't wish to repent will listen to God. Like it can happen, you just have to be willing to go to take the opportunities that God provides you. And ultimately, it's not yours to it's not your people to convert. They're God's. They're God's, and people will do what they're going to do. It's your life. It's just your life to live. And like it's a very encouraging thought when people can approach a circumstance and say, it is not my job to bend to this world. It is the world's job to bend to Jesus's feet, and that his truth will be spoken, and not, I'm not trying to beat you up with it. It's just this is what is accurate. There's N.T. Wright has a new book out, and it's called it's centered around good news, and the basic nature is that like we try to sometimes we want to sell this thing like it's a moral thing, like we're trying to give you a moral way to live, but no, it's news. It happened. It's fact, and as opposed to if you hear fact, if you hear news, the reality has changed. Some event has occurred that did not occur before, And now you know that, and your reality is different than it was. And I was explaining this to somebody. He doesn't really say this in the book, but I was explaining this to somebody earlier in the week because I thought, to be honest with you, it really is it's the difference between sanity and insanity. It's the person that hears news, information, fact, and then pretends like it's not real, that's insanity. That's not reacting to a world in the way that it exists. The person that hears news, fact, and says – and then it impacts their life. It changes who they're alive. They change with the circumstances that have already changed. Like, that's a sane way of dealing with life. And so the thing is like, we want to put sometimes the information about Christ as if it's not news, as if it's option, as if it's moral teaching or whatever. It's news. It's good news, and it's changed reality, and we have it to react to. And that's the thing is like an answer kind of talking you know, what your daughter did is like, that's just a reflection of news. The news is God designs, Jesus rocks. Like, that's news. That's truth. As opposed to like displaying it as options or moral teachings or whatever. So like, it's just interesting if we just went from the fact that it's news, it's information that has changed the world, and we're simply sharing it as opposed to like trying to figure out clever ways to do things or figure out like formulas to do things. We're just sharers of news, and then that reflects so much easier in your life versus you trying to figure out some sort of program or some way to kind of trick someone into engaging in something. It's just news that people can deal with. So, yeah. No reaction to Dan's Pope's sound. Everybody else good? Okay. Okay. No, I don't know why we run a radio program. Why would we do such a thing? All right. Hey, if you're listening on 99.3, the Truth Network, we're going to have to let you go. And we will see you next week. If you got some comments on the show, go to info@livefromthepath.org. You can send us an email or just check us out on the website at livefromthepath.org. And by the way, regardless of what you're doing this week, things. First one is to call Bob Eisenhower and go to EisenhowerTeam.com. His phone number's out there. Interact with Bob and say, Bob, Live from the Past says I need to be thinking about buying or selling a home. And it's just interesting. You're not committing anything. It's just something to do. And Bob Eisenhower is the man to do it with. So go to EisenhowerTeam.com. Also, WestfieldVetHospital.com. If you need to get your pets in, they're an excellent place. It's where I take my pets. They've always done a great job, very loving. And caring for my pets while also being mindful of the pocketbook. So that's WestfieldVetHospital.com. Go check them out. You can sign up for appointments online with those folks, or like I said, get a hold of Bob. If nothing else, even if you're not in the market to buy or sell a home, or you don't need to hit up the veterinary hospital, give those guys a phone call, shoot them an email, wait outside their doors at all hours of the night, and say, hey, thanks for sponsoring Life from the Path, because of their gracious support. That we get to be on the air. So very much appreciate that. So if you're on 993, we'll let you go, and we'll see you next week. I don't have any tunes.
Oh.
All right, what you got? You got a quick Dear Life from the Path?
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. My girlfriend and I have called it quits after 3 years. Distance was the main reason. It wasn't a bad breakup, but it's still a difficult transition for both of us. She would rather we not see or speak to each other for a while to let things heal. Her birthday is coming up soon. I don't feel right not acknowledging it. Her special day means a lot to her, and I still love and respect her for who she is. Is sending a card and gift appropriate, or should I just leave her be? Distance.
Yeah, you gotta leave her alone, man.
What?
Yeah, leave her alone.
Yeah. That's what she asked for, absolutely.
Even on her birthday?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think the good thing to do is send her a birthday card. You're doing it because you think that's nice. It's not. She's asked for something else. You need to do what she's asked for.
Yeah. Think of it as a gift. That's your gift to her. She asked for this. You're giving it by not contacting
her. Yeah, she will appreciate your silence more than she'll appreciate your presence.
I just want her to know that I wish her a happy birthday.
Here's the deal.
She knows. Leave her alone.
We did a gift exchange when I was in seventh grade homeroom. Okay, you're with your homeroom folks, and you're supposed to do Christmas gifts. So this kid in the class asks for a pair of Nike socks. I went to the Walmart the day before you're supposed to give the thing, and they didn't have any Nike socks. And I bought Adidas socks. That was a grave mistake. There is a cultural difference between whether you buy a man Nike socks and Adidas socks. And apparently it says something about what you think of that person. And so the moral of the story is,
my nose hasn't been straight ever since.
You give people what they want. If you can accomplish the right thing, you do the right thing, and not just what you think is going to work.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Secular's advice is send a birthday card and tell her that because the day is special, you couldn't let it pass unacknowledged. It shouldn't be necessary to send a gift in light of the fact that you are no longer a couple.
Hey, that sounds like the same thing you would say while creeping at her window. Because this day is special, I couldn't help peeping at you from the outside.
I actually agree with Secular.
Oh, damn.
You think send a card?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I don't care what she said. She still wants a birthday card.
No. Hey, this...
Trade.
You feel special?
Yeah.
I know we're...
to do with man. To know he's encroaching on from afar of you.
Is it okay for what? Dolls?
Why is the man people use a toilet and talk on a phone?
What's the difference? Okay. Hold on.
Do we have to speak from personal experience or is this just general?
I saw John Wagner talking on the phone at the urinal. Is this okay?
Okay. Dear Life from the Past. Is it okay for John Wagner to talk on a cell phone at the urinal in a public restroom? Or a lady while talking in the stalls? Also, please remind everyone to wash their hands after using the restroom.
Love, Nurse Betty.
Hey, you could just put a bulletin board up at your own house. You know what I'm saying? This is the classic example of talking at people on the Facebook or through a secular advice columnist.
Before we answer this, I have to ask you guys about a certain social situation.
Okay.
Have you ever found I may be outing myself here. Have you ever found yourself in a restroom getting in like a hand-washing competition with someone? Like, I have found myself there. Where I don't want to be the one who does not wash my hands long enough.
Yeah.
So I will overwash my hands more than I would normally do so that the man next to me does not think that I did not thoroughly wash my hands up to his
I'm office. The opposite. I want to get out of there so I can get the paper towel first. We're just in different competitions.
Okay, you want to get the paper towel first? I don't want to seem like I'm not sweating.
Both you guys are leaving the restroom I win.
Yeah, I feel like I have
restroom
never...
Restroom break accomplished.
I feel like Wagner and I have never gauged the room on what exactly we're doing in there.
I check for feet under the stalls and then leave without washing if no one's around.
Yikes.
I that's why I use a paper towel to open the door handle.
Please state your name.
I win.
That's just gross, man.
I mean, I've on a couple of occasions liked to make the other people in the restroom feel like they're washing their hands too much, and so I get in there, give it about 10 seconds worth of swipes, and I'm like, I'm out, and then I leave directly. It's to shame them for their extensive hand washing. I don't know if it's worked or not.
No,
you pious jerk, Boova.
Maybe. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so what's the etiquette on the phone in the bathroom?
Don't do it. It's weird. It's weird.
I think it's better than talking on the phone while you're, like, checking out at the gas station or something. I think if you're going to have to
that's
do
rude.
It,
yeah.
That's way rude.
Yeah.
And people will comment. I've heard people comment to, like, the people on the phone, like, hold on, I'm at the gas station. The lady wants to talk to me about my stuff. You willfully walked up here, man. You know what I'm saying? Those two legs can take you anywhere in this place, and you came up to the cash register. I'm sorry. But, yeah, I feel like talking in the stall is fine. No big deal.
I think it's weird.
Yeah, you can text in the stall or play Clash of Clans.
Yeah, I think with the way that communication has evolved, there's plenty of good options than talking out loud on the phone.
Listen to me. There's very few times that either a dog, a cat, or a child just does not want something from me. And so my house of freedom is in that bathroom. And sometimes I will call.
You don't even use the phone.
Sometimes I will call people just randomly.
Mike,
like, hey, what's up? I got some time. How's life?
I'm in the free cave.
Yeah. And then one of the kids will come in and be like, it's dinner time. You're pooping. Why are you in here? All right, I got to go. See ya.
Okay, the problem is this opens the door for the unexplained plonk on the other end of the line.
You can move the phone away.
Nothing.
What's that? What is that? Egg drop soup. Moving on.
The egg drop.
That's classic. Yeah.
The neighbor has gas.
No one will decipher that.
Okay. So here... The last time I was on Live for the Path, it was not like this.
Sorry, John.
It's all right. Last socially awkward question, okay?
Go ahead.
Have you guys ever been in the situation, leave me alone, where people are talking to each other in the stalls?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
regardless of if you were there or not, like, if they know you were there, they're... Have you ever had someone try to talk to you, know full well who they are, know that they know who you are, and are therefore silent... Just so that you don't actually engage in conversation with those people.
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. That has happened to me on many occasions. It was more often with my brother.
Wait, but you were trying to instigate a conversation?
No. The conversation was trying to be instigated to me because
And
the
you acted like you weren't there at all?
Like I wasn't there at all.
Well, that's, right.
That's obviously not true.
You should at least put out a grunt or something.
No,
busy.
You're a silent liar.
Lifts his feet up.
Yeah.
Isn't that a live omission?
Where did he go?
No, like, I don't... What if someone else comes in, right? We're having a conversation. Like, it's just uncomfortable.
This is where those rapture theories come from. First, my brother was in the stall next to me, and then his feet weren't there anymore.
There's just shoes.
And I thought, oh, no.
That's it. Shoes with no owner any longer.
What happened to Bula?
You have a very mild form of selective mutism.
I'm just saying, like, I'm completely uncomfortable.
That makes a lot
of
sense. Bula was in his seventh dispensational. And then he disappeared. Rough times, though. All right. No, all right, yeah, done. You should stop doing that. Yeah.
Secular's advice is, hold on, I got to get past the hand washing. No, there's no advice.
What?
Secular did not offer any return advice.
Huh. They just published it?
Secular doesn't understand the question.
Oh, no, here it is. I just didn't see it. Secular says, I can think of a few things more unpleasant than conversing with someone with the sound of running water, or worse, in the background and toilets flushing. Why anyone would do this is beyond me. It's very rude. And while I can remind people about hand washing until the cows come home, I'll suggest instead that men and women who use public restrooms not touch the door, handle without a paper towel. When available, firmly in hand. I've done that. Here's the deal. This is terrible. I only run into situations of where the bathroom is disgusting when I have like my little girls with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to take my little girl into a public restroom, and like, they're of the age where they're going to have to go in the dude's room with me.
Yeah.
And it is always just a disaster in there. Like, it's never a... In fact, I've been to one restroom that was uptown, and it was at the Chick-fil-A. And I took the ladies in there, and I said, this is amazing. And I walked out, and I said, I talked to the manager. You know, I act like I was mad. And a guy came over, and I said, you know what, dude? I have to take my kids in the dude's room of everywhere I go, and this was by far the cleanest. And I can't tell you how much I really appreciate that. Because it was just, like, I was blown away that it was a clean dude's restroom, and the ladies got in there, and it wasn't just a complete disaster.
Yeah.
But anyway, take that to your, you know, to your local establishments. You have a clean dude's room, people with that have little girls will really appreciate that.
You've been listening to Live from the Path. We appreciate you hanging out with us here on the podcast.
I'm talking about restrooms here.
I hear what you're saying. Big thanks to John Wagner, who's made mistakes in life, and this was one of them. But thanks for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure.
We love John. All right, you guys, we will see you next week. Thank you for listening to Live from the Path.
Sometimes when you're in the restroom.